Well, one of the most dreaded things that any young person can hear is this. Son, or daughter, or granddaughter, or grandson, go clean your room. Oh, no! Anything but that! Please, no! Now, maybe you had a mother like mine. She had a phrase. And I'll see if you remember this phrase. See if you can finish this phrase. Cleanliness is next to impossible. That's right. Cleanliness is next to godliness. How many times did my mother tell me that in preparation to the argument that she was going to get because we didn't want to go clean your room? May begin as a little child with, go pick up your toys. It may end as a husband when they hear the dreaded request, dear, go clean the garage. Same reaction, no, anything but that, please. I can do anything but that. Maybe you have memories of cleaning your room. I've told you before, my mother ran a pretty tight ship with four boys. My sister was the oldest. She got off easy. She was always daddy's little girl. Anyway, never mind. Before we came into the church every Saturday morning, before we could go do anything else, the bedroom had to be wet mopped. We had wood floors like a lot of you probably have, and had to be mopped every week. That's just the way it was. It was the only way to keep the bugs and the animals down in the room. But that was our responsibility. You might have memories of cleaning your room as a child. And you probably did something like this. You went in and moved a few things around and came out and said, I'm done. Well, did you clean anything? Yes, I cleaned it all up. It's clean. Now, whose version of clean are we going to accept in this case? Usually, mom or dad's ends up being the rule. Now, I won't ask for a show of hands, but I'll be able to tell immediately by the looks on your faces. How many of you might be called the king of clutter? Yeah, see, you don't have to elbow each other. I can see just by those guilty looks that some of you fall into that category. Maybe it's the queen of clutter. But we seem to be in a continual battle. Okay, some are elbowing each other. Okay, enough. We seem to be in a continual battle to keep things clean and organized. And would you say that that is true spiritually as well as physically? Now, maybe your house is one of those houses that just runs like clockwork. See, my mother tried to instill in me, she tried to instill in me that everything has a place and everything should be in its place. So if you take something out of a drawer, eventually it goes back in. Of course, she later taught me that you had to wash it first. So that made more sense as you got used to those things. Everything in its place that has a place. Everything should have a place. It should be in its place. Now, maybe your household runs like that. That there's nothing out of place. Every day could be a day when anyone could come into your house as company, walk through the house and find it just right. Everything neat and in order, and if that's the case, you must live by yourself. But we're in a continual battle to keep things in order. I tend to run in cycles. There are certain rooms of the house that are kind of sacred, that are always clean, that are always in order, like kind of the living room is that way. It wasn't that way when we had little kids, but it became that way over the course of time, once the children got old enough. But the living room, even when the kids were little, look, this is not the place for toys. When you play here, play, and then we'll put the toys away. We'll get things straightened out. But my office is kind of a different story. It's a continual battle. It's one of those cycles that the piles grow until I can't see anymore. Then I take a day or two and organize and file and handle, and the piles go back down. The garage is that way. Sometimes you're just crazy busy. You bring the stuff home, you throw it in the garage, and there it is for an indeterminate period of time. And then I got to get at that, get it cleaned up, straightened up, and wow, you can fit a car in here again. That's amazing. We're the only nation in the world that puts $2,000 worth of junk in a garage and a $30,000 automobile out in the driveway because we can't fit it in the garage anymore. Like, what is so valuable in that garage? Well, you know, bike. It's worth about $30. Wheelbarrow, it's all rusted and has a flat tire. That's worth about nothing. Piles of junk that we... See, I'm hitting close to home. I see more elbows going here. The point is, it's a constant battle to stay clean and to stay organized. I would submit to you, brethren, that is the constant struggle for all of us spiritually as well. Now again, maybe your life is one of those where your life is clockwork. And you know that every day at this specific time, I will pray from 6:30 to 7 a.m. And once 7 a.m. comes, I will get my cup of tea and I will do my Bible study from 7 to 7:30 or 7:45 or maybe 8 o'clock if I've got the time. And every day, that is the absolute routine. Every time something upsetting happens, we fall immediately to our knees and start praying for God's help. Maybe that's your life. Maybe it's not quite to that level of organization yet. Turn with me to Exodus chapter 13. One of the lessons of the days of unleavened bread is, in essence, God saying to us, go clean your room. Go clean your room. Every year he does this. I tried that after we came into the church. I said, Mom, God only has us clean the house once a year for unleavened bread. That ought to be good enough for my bedroom. After living in the barn for a week, I decided maybe she was right. The room ought to be clean. Exodus chapter 13 and verse 3. Moses said to the people, giving instruction, remember this day in which you came out from Egypt, out of the house of bondage, for by strength of hand the Eternal brought you out from this place. There shall no leavened bread be eaten. So here we are, picturing the day, remembering the day that we were called out of spiritual filth, spiritual clutter, into the pure truth of God. So that's why last night was so special to us, because it's an annual reminder that God drew us out from the clutter, from the dirt of false understanding, or maybe no understanding at all, into the glorious truth. He invited us into this beautiful room that is organized and clean and healthful. And we remember that every year. It's interesting. My daughter moved into a house recently. She knew the landlord. Landlord happened to live several states away. So it was kind of a mutual arrangement. I'll move into the house, do some things to it, take care of it, and it'll be cheaper rent. So it worked out very well. But when you went to the house, whoever had lived there before was filthy. And there was junk everywhere. In the basement. Well, you expect junk in the basement, right? But you don't expect perfectly good clothes laying on the floor, all wet, growing mold. You don't expect that. You don't expect to find a refrigerator that's been off for probably 8 months, full of food, growing stuff. You don't expect every bedroom to have kitty litter sprinkled all over the place. Like, what are you thinking? You don't expect to go, okay, let's just move some of the stuff into the garage. Open the garage door. Ah, everything that couldn't fit in the house was in the garage, and they just left it all. Like, what do you think? Anybody a landlord here? You probably had these experiences. People just walk out and leave stuff. Like, what are you thinking? What's going on here? God says once a year, take some time to, in essence, clean house. Reevaluate. That's what we're doing during the days of unleavened bread. We're told to put out leaven. Don't eat leaven for these 7 days. Verse 4, this day you came out in the month Abib. And it shall be when the Eternal shall bring you into the land of the Canaanites, Hittites, the Hivites, the Amorites, the Jebusites, which he swore unto your fathers to give you, a land that flows with milk and honey. Compare this. Slavery in Egypt, beautiful room to live in. It's got everything. It's got streams. It's got valleys. It's got milk. It's got honey. It's got... God wants us out of the filth into a new place. God wants us out of the spiritual filth into a new way of life. He's drawn us out from where we were. He swore to give us this land. Flowing with milk and honey, you shall keep this service in this month. Verse 6. 7 days you shall eat unleavened bread, and in the seventh day shall be a feast unto the Eternal. Now again, I won't ask questions. Some of you grew up with a very strong tradition of spring cleaning. But I'd like to ask, just into mind, don't need a show of hands, how many of you ladies would really clean your cupboards and kitchen every year? If you weren't told to do it. Now, some of you I know would. Some of you, there's not a chance on this green earth that we would do such a thorough job if God didn't tell us to. What's the point? Well, yes, cleanliness is next to godliness. We know that. We should be very reasonably clean people. We should. We should not be kings and queens of clutter if we can help it. Now, sometimes we inherit clutter. We got to deal with that. Okay, it's a tough life. Got to work through some of these things. But God says, clean it out. Clean your room. Now, again, is he concerned about the room? Is he really worried about whether or not we have clutter? No. It's a spiritual lesson. Verse 6, 7 days you shall eat unleavened bread, and in the seventh day shall be a feast of the Eternal. We'll do that next week. Unleavened bread shall be eaten 7 days. There shall no leavened bread be seen with you, neither shall there be leaven seen within all your quarters. You know the Jews have an interesting way of interpreting this. They basically understand that you should get leaven out. But they have rather creative ways of doing that. There is a legal document in which, if I were Jewish, I could sell you, Gentiles, I could sell you all my leaven. There's a legal contract. Now, it has to be, to be legal, it has to be written up in certain manner, and it has to be actually executed by the rabbi himself. But I could take all of my leaven and write it up in the contract. The rabbi can then come to you and say, would you be willing to buy Dave's leaven for the next week? Oh, it's not enough to buy the leaven, because I have to sell you where it is stored. So in essence, I don't have to move my leaven at all. All I have to do is write up a contract where you own that space for that week. Now, isn't that convenient? What's the point? Can you see why Christ would say, you know, you guys are straining at gnats and swallowing camels? You see, I don't want a clean house. I don't want to clean my room. I'll just drop this contract, have the rabbi bring it to you. You sign it, I sign it. You own my kitchen for that week. Get out of here. You've got to be kidding me. But it's amazing. So, in New York City and other places around the world, kitchens are owned by Gentiles for a week. Like, I don't know that I'd go around saying, hey, I got a Jewish kitchen this week. Look at this. Here's the deed. What's the point? You're missing the point. God says, get this stuff out. Clean house. He's not talking about just moving a few things around. Brother, we have to ask ourselves, have I been moving things around? You see, I'm good at this in my office. I unpile it here and put it in a pile over here. What has been accomplished if I do that? Nothing. We can examine ourselves and move our little pile of leaven spiritually from one side of the room to the other. Have we changed? Have we cleaned it out? Have we grown? We're not just told to put out leaven for these 7 days. We're told to begin to partake of unleavened bread. So verse 7 again, unleavened bread shall be eaten 7 days. There shall no leavened bread be there. Shall no leavened bread be seen with you. Neither shall there be leaven seen with you in all your quarters or all your boundaries. Get rid of it. Don't sell it. Don't make a weak contract and get it back 7 days later. Verse 8, you shall show your son in the day, saying, this is done because of that which the Eternal did to me when I came forth out of Egypt. Now again, is that consistent with selling your leaven space for a week? So you show your son, well, we rented Egypt for a week, and then we went back. Excuse me. Verse 9, it shall be for a sign upon you, upon your hand, and a memorial between your eyes, that the Eternal's law may be in your mouth, for with a strong hand has the Eternal brought you out of Egypt. You shall therefore keep this ordinance in his season from year to year. God said, get it out. For this week, leaven is dirty. Should have been cleaned out. Should be kept out. Unleavened bread is clean and should be put in, should be eaten. So we very clearly see the physical routine. Get the leaven out and throw it away. Rid yourself of it. So when it comes to the spiritual leaven, we cannot be content just moving it around in our spiritual house. We have to get rid of it. Because God's not focusing on cleaning house. Yes, cleaning our room is important. But the spiritual lesson is what God is really zeroing in on. He wants us to walk through the spiritual process of cleaning up our lives and then keeping them clean. Not just moving things from one side to the other. So what we'd like to talk about for the next few minutes is this issue of cleaning our rooms. Keeping them clean. What are some of the items of dirt or clutter that God encourages us to get rid of? What are some of the clean, orderly items that God encourages us to put in? Because each day during these days of unleavened bread, we're going to be avoiding eating leavened products. And as we do so, we're to think about sin. As Hebrews says, the sin that so easily besets us or ensnares us. We're supposed to be thinking about that, and then we're supposed to reject it. There's a physical action, no, I'm not going to eat that, to remind us of the spiritual responsibility, no, I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to think that. I'm not going there. And each of the days, during the days of unleavened bread, we eat unleavened bread. And as we do that, we think about what this is, what it pictures, that it's now a replacement for sin. It's encouraging what's right. Unleavened bread pictures righteousness. So again, a physical action to remind us of the spiritual point. So let's take a look at cleaning our room. I want you to imagine, as we did during the excellent sermonette today, hadn't ever quite thought about being in the middle of a million people all walking through the Red Sea. That was really interesting. I want you to put yourself back to when you were a child, or maybe even a teenager, somewhere in your childhood years, when it was your responsibility. Of course, if you're still there, that's okay. Somewhere where you can relate to what you went through when dad or mom, of course it wasn't dad, when mom said, go clean your room. That's the mindset we'd like to have. Ask this question. And there are three reasons underneath this first question. The first question is this. Why is cleaning our room so difficult? Now again, maybe you were that child that mom said, go clean your room. And you said, already done, mom. I was up at 6:30 this morning, scrubbed the carpet, dusted all the furniture, put all my toys away, arranged all of my baseball cards by year order, and then reshuffled them by team, then reshuffled them by batting average. I took care of that already. Okay, everybody's got this blank look like, that's impossible. Huh? There hasn't been a child alive that's ever done that. Why is cleaning our room so difficult? Three reasons. Number one, junk can be hard to identify. Remember the phrase, one man's junk is another man's junk as well. That's right. No, it's treasure. One man's junk is another man's treasure. We can kind of think that way sometimes. See, God tells us to clean our room spiritually. And it can be difficult because junk sometimes can be hard to identify. How many of you have seen the television show? I don't know if I have the name right, but it has something to do with hoarders. Anyone see this show? If you haven't, don't. It's disgusting. They go around apparently the country to find people who probably, and I don't mean to say this insultingly, probably have some issues. And they just hoard stuff. And it's not just a matter of, oh, I need 37,000 coffee cups. I mean, it's just, most of it's just trash. It's filth. And they go in and they take the cameras in there and they talk to this person, and the person living basically in squalor. And there might be a little path that they can walk in to get into their house or sit on their bed or sit on their couch or sit in the chair or cook a little food, but the house is just filled with junk. And what do they say when you talk to these people? Well, this is valuable stuff. This is valuable stuff. I mean, they're literally mounds of cat dung and dog dung and bugs and lice and cockroaches, and this is valuable stuff to who? Isn't it true, though, that junk can be hard to identify? Sometimes. I'd like to give you a quiz as you turn to Ephesians chapter 5. What is really necessary and good, and what is just plain old junk, is sometimes difficult to see. How can you tell if something is just a piece of junk or might be worth a great deal? You see, sometimes people do not clean up because they're afraid that amongst all the junk will be something valuable. And so they never start. Is it true that leaven can be hard to identify sometimes? Probably true. How many of us have stood reading those tiny little ingredients, trying to figure out, what is that? Is that leaven or is that not leaven? Some is obvious. How many think yeast is leaven? Okay, that one's pretty obvious. Yes, Bobby, it is. Okay, just teasing. It's obvious. So there are obvious things. We all know that yeast is leaven. We all know that taking God's name in vain is breaking the commandment, is sin. We all know that adultery is sin. There's some that are very obvious, very clear. Sodium bicarbonate. Yes or no? Yes, leaven? Yes. Pretty much everybody knows that one, right? That's a pretty obvious one. So anything that has that baking soda, baking powder, sodium bicarbonate, we got that. How about sodium citrate? How many think it's leaven? Everybody's kind of going, I'm not raising my hand. I don't know. The answer is no. Sodium citrate is a flavoring that gives things like club soda its little bit of a tangy flavor and taste, a little saltiness to it. How about ammonium carbonate? How many think that's Leaven, ammonium carbonate, is leavening. Ammonium carbonate is also called baker's ammonia. For those who are of, let's say, Scandinavian or German descent, like our family was, hartshorn is what it was called when we were kids. My grandmother would bake with it. Hartshorn. Because literally, supposedly, it was invented in Germany by ground up stag's horns, called hart horns. They would grind it up, put it in the flour, and it would cause it to grow, cause it to be leavened. And it's said that this leavening is about the best taste you can get, much better taste than baking soda or baking powder. So if you ever want to experiment sometime, you can go on the internet and you can find ammonium carbonate, hartshorn, in small little jars. As long as you keep it tight, it'll stay forever. But if it's exposed to air, it'll evaporate. Now the challenge, the reason it's probably not used much today, is because it stinks to high heaven while you're baking. How many of you ever cleaned out a barn? Yeah, stall, that ammonium smell, that's pretty much, that ammonium smell is what happens when you bake with this stuff. So you can understand how it fell out of favor. I mean, there's no taste, there's no ammonium taste to it when it's finished baking, but you gotta have the window open while you're baking. Whew! But it's leavening. Now, how many of you have ever seen baker's ammonia? Your grandmother would have used that. Your great-grandmother would have used it. How about potash? I mean, I think that's a leavening agent. Okay, the answer is yes, it is. Potash or potassium carbonate. How about potassium bicarbonate? I mean, that's a leavening agent. Yes, it is. That's right. Most bicarbonates are. So you got, some of these are hard to tell. I might have read these and had no idea. How about active dry yeast? Leaven or no leaven? Yes, it is. How about yeast extract? No, man, this is so hard. Point is, sometimes leaven can be hard to discern. We know, that something like adultery is clearly wrong. What about letting my eyes wander on things? Where's my mind going? Well, I know I shouldn't lust after things. I know that I shouldn't covet, but boy, that new car, that's so nice. Where are we on the scale? We know leaven represents sin, but isn't there occasion in our lives, in our minds, in our hearts, that the line between where right and wrong actually is hard to identify? Where does appreciating beauty, as I've heard some men say, go into lust and adultery? Where is that line? Where is it? See, sometimes it can be a little hard to identify. So obviously we encourage all of us to be conservative, be careful. Here we are in Ephesians 5, in verse 15. Notice what's stated here. See then that you walk circumspectly. Circumspectly. What does that mean? It means walk cautiously. Walk cautiously. We know that sometimes junk can be hard to identify. Something we'd throw away might be valuable. At the same time, we're told to walk carefully. Better to play it conservatively. Rather than wonder, where is that line? Let's stay back of the line a ways. See then that you walk circumspectly, it says in verse 15, not as fools, but as wise. It's wise to be cautious. Verse 16, redeeming the time, because the days are evil. Be cautious, because the days are evil. That makes sense. Verse 17, therefore do not be unwise, but understand what the will of the Lord is. Wouldn't it be wonderful if God's will were always as plain as the nose on our face? Should I or should I not? Are questions that we all struggle with. things that we have to deal with. Turn back to Romans chapter 2. If it were always easy to know junk from valuable things, to know leaven from what is not leavened, to know good from bad. Where is that line? Sometimes it's hard for us to know exactly. It's challenging. Okay, our boss asks us to do something at work and we're not quite sure if it's legal. Where do we go with this? Play conservatively. Romans 12 and verse 1. I beseech you therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God, that you present your bodies a living sacrifice, holy, acceptable to God, which is your reasonable service. We know that. Romans 12 and verse 2. And do not be conformed to this world. If we're conservative, if we're careful, if we're cautious, we won't be conformed to this world. But be transformed by the renewing of your mind. And then here's an interesting phrase. That you may prove what is good and acceptable and perfect will of God. Now, if it were always obvious, what would we have to prove? I know people who serve others for a living. A good friend of ours back in New York State years ago really struggled with how much to charge people for his services. He happened to be a builder, still is to this day, builds very fine quality homes. And he always struggled with, how much do I charge these people? I mean, I do good work, I try to be honest, I try to be good, give them a good deal. At the same time, I'm making an insane amount of money. Is it right to do that? Well, it's what people will pay, but does that make it right? So he struggled with that. What is right in that situation? Is it right to simply say, well, the market will bear that? If that's what people are willing to pay me, I should take it? Versus, is my effort really worth that? It's a tough struggle. Now, most of us have the other problem. They need to pay me more for what I do. I'm getting ripped off. But where is the line? If it were that easy to always know what is perfect righteousness and unrighteousness, we wouldn't need to prove anything. But God, I think, sometimes allows those lines to be a little bit foggy, so that we will examine ourselves, we'll sort through these issues to see what our motive really is. Is our motive to please God? Is our motive to get as close to the edge without going over as we can? What is our thinking that way? If God is going to entrust us with the universe, we've got to draw a pretty clear line between junk and good stuff. We've got to make that judgment. It says here that you may prove what is that good and acceptable will of God. Prove it. The word prove, dokimazo, means to test, to examine, to prove, to scrutinize. This was a word used talking about gold or silver. You've got to examine this, test it, to see whether it's authentic or not. So it is sometimes challenging to know junk from what is good. And we've got to be looking to God, asking for God's help to make that delineation, to make it obvious. We're talking with one individual many years ago. Worked at a shipyard in Maine. And all the workers were delighted because they got a big government contract. That was great. What were they going to be building? Warships that are going to be responsible for killing people. And he had to wrestle with, is it right for me to make parts for these things that are going to be killing other people? Is it right or is it wrong? Well, some would say, well, I'm not actually doing it. I'm just making a metal piece here. That's all I'm doing. I'm just welding a sheet to 3-inch iron. Whatever the situation might be. Is it right? Is it wrong? He had to sort through that. He had to prove, to test, to examine, to scrutinize, to say, can I, as a Christian, with conscience, do this? Tough challenge. Junk can sometimes be difficult to spot. So God allows that to be the case so that we analyze ourselves, that we go deep within ourselves, draw close to God, and wrestle it out with God, come to a conclusion on those things. So sometimes that's why cleaning our house can be so difficult, because junk is hard to tell. There's a second reason cleaning our rooms can be so difficult, and that is junk can get into tough places. Junk can get into tough places. Junk can get into rooms, closets, attics, garages, in the rafters, basements, cellars, crawl spaces, barns, sheds, cupboards, cabinets, outbuildings. You might have even known people who have junk in rented storage spaces. Now, the reason I know that is at the top of our street, those, a lot of you have been to our home, at the top of our street, across the street, is a business. It's called You Store It. Is that what it's called? It's a self-storage. I lived there 16 years. I don't know the name of the place. Anyway, it's these long garage-like buildings. I think they're 3 or 4 in a row. And people store their stuff in there. They rent them by the month to put stuff in. And about every 2 months, somebody has not paid the rental bill on their unit. And so what do the owners of the place do? They take all the stuff out and they bring it out to the street and put it on the curb. So that when the trash guy comes along, they throw all the stuff away. So it seems like at least every other month, we have the danger of terrible car accidents at the top of the hill. Because people will stop to see what junk has been put out on the curb. So I know, driving by there every time, that people store stupid junk that the guy at the storage place can't even get a dime for it, so he puts it out on the street. So people actually rent spaces to put junk. The same is true of leaven. It can be in rooms and closets and attics, garage, rafters, basements, cellars, crawl spaces, sheds, barns, outbuildings. Can get into amazing places. I'll give you a quick illustration. This year when I was cleaning out my car for the Days of Unleavened Bread, really like to give the car a once over. So I mean, you do everything, right? So my wife's legs are shorter than mine. No surprise, right? So she has the seat a little bit closer. And the reason I say this is because I know that this was my leaven. Because this leaven happened to be located in the little rail that the seat moves back and forth on. You know, you hold up the bar and you slide forward. Well, she slides forward. I get in, I slide back because I like a little more leg room. So in that little rail, you could only see this when the seat was all the way back, the way I like to have it. So I know it was my leaven. So easy, right? You kind of get that vacuum tool and you pull the seat aside and you kind of shove it in there. And I got that nozzle right on top of that leaven. I could see clearly that it was crumbs. Okay, maybe it probably was Pam's, but I had to clean it out anyway. So I got the nozzle right down on top of it, and it will not come up. Like, how can this be? This is a shop vac. This is no sissy vac. This is the big tub, you know. This baby's got some suction. But it will not come up. And I realize the reason it won't come up is because those little runners are greased so that the thing can slide back and forth easily. So this piece of leaven is stuck in that little runner, that little groove, and you can put the nozzle right down, but it doesn't get all the way down on top of it because it's in that little... You think, how did Pam get that leaven in there? How did that happen? Well, after some little effort, I realized the only way that I'm going to get this leaven out. Now, it's not like, okay, I vacuumed the car, it's good enough. I knew it was there. I could not be comfortable knowing that I intentionally left leaven there. So I was able to bend a coat hanger down in there, finally get around the seat and into that rail and kick this thing out so I could vacuum it up. But isn't it the true analogy regarding spiritual leaven? That it can get into tough places, that it's hard to dislodge. This is why so often we talk to our young people, please do not begin bad habits. Do not begin these things, because if and when you do, it's so much harder to change that later on. So much harder. You begin to compound issues and problems. Turn back to the Ephesians again, to Ephesians chapter 5. Leaven can get into awfully tough places, and it can make it very difficult to dislodge. So here in Ephesians 5, Paul gives advice. We talked about not even starting some of these things. Sometimes we don't want to clean house because we know it's going to be hard. It's in tough places. We know cleaning out that garage is going to take a while. Now, we had a very fortunate event in our family as we turned to Ephesians 5 a number of years ago. When we moved into our house, you want to get started with job and brethren and responsibilities very quickly. So everything just goes in the garage. Everything you're not currently needing and goes in the garage. And there it stayed, I don't know, 5, 6, 7 years, probably 8 years, 9 years. Finally, we'd saved enough money to be able to pave the driveway and pave the garage. The garage was a gravel floor. So the best thing in the world was to go ahead and get concrete in the garage, to get a floor. Because everything that was in the garage had to be removed. So I set up this tarp system in the yard and moved everything out of the garage. And I looked at that, I said, what an idiot. Just kick that stuff out to the curb. This is a bunch of junk. Junk. But it was a great lesson. So my wife now calls it purging. Good purge. And she just has to tell me the word. You know, the basement could use a little purging. And I get the message. So I say, as soon as you get to it, sweetheart, help yourself. You know, it's fine. Do that. Ephesians 5 and verse 1. Therefore, be imitators of God as dear children. God has no leaven, no sin. We want to imitate that. Verse 2. Walk in love as Christ also has loved us and given himself for us, an offering and a sacrifice to God for a sweet-smelling aroma. We can grasp that. Christ is perfect. What a joy to be around. A joy to be a servant of His. Verse 3. But fornication and all uncleanness and covetousness, let it not even be named among you as is fitting saints. You see, junk can get into a lot of places in our lives. It goes on to say in verse 4, neither filthiness, nor foolish talking, nor coarse jesting, which are not fitting, but rather the giving of thanks. What's he saying? Sin, leaven, can work its way into our sexuality, into our belongings, into our humor, into our language. So it's important for us to analyze that. So once a year, God says, clean your room, see where the leaven has gotten. If it's in that little runner underneath the car seat, get it out. If there are areas of uncleanness, of fornication, or covetousness, or coarse jesting, filthiness, foolish talking, as we go through our process of de-leavening, we look for those things, even if they're in tough places. Verse 5, for this you know, that no fornicator, no unclean person, nor covetous man who is an idolater, has any inheritance in the kingdom of Christ and God. So it's a very good thing that once a year God says, clean your room. So we can see if these things have begun to invade us. If junk has gotten into tough places. Verse 6, let no one deceive you with empty words. For because of these things, the wrath of God comes upon the sons of disobedience. Therefore, do not be partakers with them. For you were once in darkness, but now you are light in the Lord. So walk as children of light. For the fruit of the Spirit is goodness, is in all goodness, righteousness, and truth. Finding out what is acceptable to the Lord in verse 10. So whatever area sin may have worked its way into, those tough places, whether it's our sexuality, whether it's our belongings, whether it's our humor or our language or whatever else is mentioned here, that has to be gotten out, has to be worked out. Verse 3 and 4 in the New International Version is stated this way, but among you there must not be even a hint of sexual immorality or any kind of impurity or of greed, because these are improper for God's holy people. Clean your room. Nor, verse 4, should there be any obscenity, foolish talk, or coarse joking, which are out of place, but rather thanksgiving. So we analyze our lives. If junk is in tough to get places, we get it out. Bend the hanger, do what it takes, but get it out. There's a third reason that cleaning our rooms can be difficult. And that is, junk can be hard to extract. Junk can be hard to extract. As I've mentioned to you before, we grew up in rural Wisconsin. And in a lot of farm communities, it is usually the case that once vehicles reach their useful limit, where do they end up? Somewhere on the property, just sitting there. And they'll sit there for a week or two. And there's always this intention that we're going to get that piece of junk off of here. But it's there a year later. And then it's there 5 years later, and then it's there 10 years later, and you've probably all experienced or seen this where almost literally a forest grows up around those pieces of junk. And by the time that happens, it's almost impossible to get rid of them. They're impossible. You got to start with a chainsaw to cut down the saplings, and I speak from experience. My dad had an old 63 Dodge work truck, big old thing, and it was a joy to ride in for the year or two that it worked. Ended up there on the farm property, and for all I know is still there to this day, even though they've sold the house and moved far away. It's almost impossible to get it out. You might have granddad's old car on the property like we did. Grandpa had a green Ford station wagon, big old tank, sat on the property for who knows how long. My grandmother lived on the property for a number of years in a trailer that we moved onto the property. So Grandma would be right there after Grandpa died. So we got Grandma's trailer. Trailers only last for so long, and then they start to fall apart. And if you think a good mobile home is hard to move, try moving a rotted mobile home. It's almost impossible to extract. And sometimes sin forms the same kind of challenge. Because sometimes even after we identify it, it can be a challenge to actually get rid of it. To actually rid ourselves of that junk or that dirt. For those fellows who work on cars, it's like grease under the fingernails. You can wash with soap 100 times and it doesn't budge, that stuff. I mean, until you got the heavy-duty stuff out and the scrub brush, that stuff ain't going to come out. Some of our sins are like that. It takes a cleaner and a scrub brush to dislodge it. We must be serious about cleaning our room. Take it seriously. Hebrews chapter 12, that means come up with a plan to get rid of it. Not just say once again, well, there it is again, let's move it to the other side of the room for next year. How about a plan for overcoming? A plan for change. Hebrews chapter 12, in verse 1. Junk can be hard to extract, but we've got to have a plan. Hebrews 12 and verse 1 tells us, therefore, we also, since we're surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, let us lay aside every weight. It takes a plan to do that. And the sin, and isn't this true, which so easily ensnares us. Don't we all wish that it was hard for sin to trap us, to ensnare us, to wrap us up, to get us going in that direction? It can be hard to get rid of junk. The word ensnare here, or as the King James, the sin that so easily besets us, the word besets, means to skillfully surround. It's a military term. Sin kind of surrounds us too easily. Now, it's hard to be surrounded if you're moving. But if we're just sitting that sin there, it's going to surround us. So like the hoarder's house, we can slowly become surrounded by junk or by sin that makes extraction very challenging. See, Satan's design is to overwhelm us. We look around, there's so much, we can't... Where do we start? What do we do? How many hoarders are that way? I don't know where to start. They have to have somebody help. Thankfully, we've got an advocate. We've got help. So we understand this is something we have to do. Turn over to Colossians chapter 3. Colossians chapter 3 and verse 5. Colossians 3 and verse 5. Put to death, therefore, your members which are upon the earth. Things like fornication, uncleanness, inordinate affection, evil concupiscence, covetousness, which is idolatry. For which things' sake the wrath of God comes upon the children of disobedience. Okay, we know that. How do we do that? Now that we've identified why cleaning the room can be so difficult, what do we do to get started? What do we do? We're told to go clean our room. We're told to become you perfect as your Father in heaven is perfect. How do we do that? Well, it's interesting. Experts will say, never tell a child, go clean your room. Now all the children are saying, yes! No, don't say go clean your room because that's not specific enough. It's also been said, children will not do what you expect. They will do what you inspect. So you have to be much more specific then. Go in your room, pick up everything off the floor, put the toys where they belong, and wipe off your dresser. Okay, that's very specific. It's the same thing as go clean your room. But now it's very specific. So we begin to ask, how do we do this? How do we become free of these sins? I'll give you 3 quick points. Number 1, commit to being clean. Commit to being clean. Take it seriously. It's not enough to know the truth in an intellectual way. It's not enough to know that the Sabbath is God's holy day. It's not enough to know we shouldn't eat leaven during the days of unleavened bread. We must commit to being spiritually clean. Really be striving for righteousness. Romans chapter 13. Romans 13, verses 11 to 14 reminds us, now is the time to do it. Not sometime in the future. The room needs to be cleaned. We need to start. There's one expert that says, got five steps to cleaning a bedroom. First step is make the bed. Just make the bed. Even if you just pull the top cover all the way over the top, and it's a nice smooth surface. Be amazed how that begins to start. I'll give you a personal story. My grandmother, wonderful woman, my father's mother, was a hoarder. Lived in his little flat in Chicago. We'd go down to visit her because she had a candy cabinet. You've probably heard me talk about that. She was my favorite grandma because she always gave us candy. Who could fault that? But she had so much junk. Stuff that she bought, most of it was never taken out of the packages. It was stacked everywhere. It was a one-bedroom flat in an apartment building in Chicago. Where do you think she slept? She and her second husband. Till he died and she married a third husband. They both slept on the couch. Pull out couch every night. You know why? Because the bedroom was so full of junk, they could not sleep on the bed. Stuff was stacked on the bed 4 feet tall. What? You ever slept on a couch bed? Those things were invented by chiropractors to earn money. They're like the most uncomfortable things on earth. Commit to being clean. Romans 13 in verse 11. Knowing the time that now it's high time to awake out of sleep. For now is our salvation nearer when we believe. Paul in essence is saying don't go to sleep. Don't be weary in well-doing. Now is the time. Commit to being clean. Verse 12, the night is far spent. The day is at hand. Let us therefore cast off the works of darkness. Put on the armor of light. Let us walk honestly as in the day, not rioting, not drunkenness, not in chambering, not wantonness, not strife, not envying, but put on the Lord Jesus Christ and make not provision for the flesh. Fulfill the lusts thereof. For not really committed to being clean, we'll never start the room. So committing means, if we know we have sins, beginning a program to beat them, to clean them out, to get rid of them. Second step. Second way to get clean is to start small. Start small. Yes, there's lots of junk. Yes, we look at ourselves and we see lots of areas that need improvement. Start small. Make the bed. One expert says, since that's the largest flat surface in a room, when you make the bed, you're approximately 25% done. That's a little bit encouraging. The next step, take everything off the floor and put it on the bed. That's what she recommends. Put everything on the bed. Some are saying, there's no way everything on my floor would ever fit on the bed. But the point is, now you got to do something with it. Because you can't go to sleep, unless you have a couch. You can't go to sleep that night unless you take care of the next step. Start to do something. Start small, whether it's making the bed, whether it's getting stuff off the floor. One person says, sort what's on the floor into three piles. Stuff that belongs in the kitchen, stuff that belongs in the hamper, stuff that belongs in the drawer. Okay, that's pretty easy. Clothes either go in the drawer if they're clean, they go in the hamper if they're dirty. If you have a hamper. Otherwise, just the basement steps, probably good enough for now. Luke chapter 3 and verse 10. Luke 3 and verse 10. The people asked him, saying, what shall we do then? Story is, John the Baptist, he's preaching righteousness, teaching God's way, and the audience is saying, okay, great, we know we're supposed to be like God, we're supposed to be righteous, what do we do? Verse 11, he answered and said to them, if you have two coats, let him impart to him that has none. Okay, first step, He didn't say, start doing every commandment of God and do it right. He simply said, look, if you got two coats, give one away to someone who doesn't have one. Start small. That's what John the Baptist's advice was. Start small. If you have two coats, give one to somebody that has none. And he that has food, let him do likewise. Got enough to eat, share it with somebody else. Verse 12, them came also the publicans to be baptized. And they said to him, Master, what shall we do? He said to them, exact or don't take any more than that which is appointed to you. Start small. Sure, you have a job to do to collect taxes for the Romans, but don't enrich yourselves on the backs of the poor. Don't do that. That's something you can do. There is something you and I can do today to begin to overcome those nasty sins that have clung to us, that we haven't cleaned out for a long time. Verse 14, soldiers likewise demanded of him, saying, what shall we do? And he said to them, do violence to no man, neither accuse any falsely, and be content with your wages. He gave them three small steps. Because maybe they had the furthest steps to go. I don't know. But three things. Don't beat up on the weak. Don't take advantage of them. Don't accuse falsely for your own benefit. Just be happy with what you're being paid. Don't try to extract it from others. Start small. So we can look at our lives and see, what can we do to start small now? To really choose to overcome. To be committed to be clean. Third step, get help. Get help. Turn to 2 Corinthians chapter 6. We'll close here. 2 Corinthians 6. Get help. It is certainly true that many of us may not be able to stir up the motivation to get it cleaned up on our own. These shows that deal with the hoarders, they realize it will never happen without help. Never happen without help. And it's certainly true, some of our sins will not be overcome without help. Help, in the sense of coming to God to ask for that help, but also help by sharing with others. Encouragement from others can mean a great deal. 2 Corinthians chapter 6, to read verse 16. General instruction, getting help. What agreement, 2 Corinthians 6, verse 16, what agreement has the temple of God with idols? For you are the temple of the living God. You are not a stone all by yourself, off by yourself. We are a temple. We are brothers and sisters. We're to build each other up, to help each other. This is not to be a place where we look at each other and point the finger at each other's weaknesses. This should be a place where we hold each other up. We're not ashamed to talk about the things we're struggling with, because we know our brothers and sisters will pray for us. They'll help us. They'll back the dumpster up to the door for us. Help us throw some things in. We're in this together. We're all struggling the same struggle. We're all fighting the same fight. We're a temple. God has said, I'll dwell in them and walk among them and be their God, and they shall be my people. Verse 17, therefore, come out from among them, the world, and be separate, says the Lord, together as a temple. Do not touch what is unclean, and I will receive you. Verse 18, I will be a father to you. You shall be my sons and daughters, says the Eternal Almighty, the Lord Almighty. Verse 1 of chapter 7, therefore, having these promises, beloved, let us cleanse ourselves from all filthiness of the flesh and the spirit, perfecting holiness in the fear of God. We're all in this together. Let's share the load. Let's help each other grow. Help each other overcome. Work with each other to be that temple that God desires. Brethren, the words, go clean your room, may have one time brought dread and despair into our lives. But with a plan of change and growth in place, the room can not only come clean, but through these days of unleavened bread will remain clean. So we'll begin, or we'll end as we began. Go clean your room.